Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
To the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly. How are you?
I'm doing good. That's a good day. Went away for the weekend, so scared because I was afraid to leave Prowler.
Yeah.
There's my cat sitter who used to be my personal trainer. She's known him for as long as I've known him, so she's always taken care of him, and her daughter is like a little cat whisperer. So they offered to actually stay at the house, so that was very comforting. And because he like randomly eats now. He eats a lot, then he might want to eat again. Like today, he went back home after Pilates to give him another half a can of food because he was eating it.
Wow.
So he's staying strong. He's up a pound.
Oh my God, that's great.
And so we're going to do a recheck of how the cancer's doing in a week and a half, right? And he's getting his shots and acupuncture, and he's looking good.
Good.
And he's frisky, and he's happy, and he's just that Prowler. That's that kitty cat.
Good.
So he did good. Yeah, and only one vomit in 7 days.
That's amazing. Actually remarkable.
With chemo and all that stuff.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Good.
It's really exciting. So then we had a great time in Santa Barbara. It was really pretty there. It was so hot.
Really?
Yeah, it was so hot up there. I used to think of Santa Barbara as the place you go to get away from the
heat.
No, it was like in the high 80s, low 90s. It was like too hot. But anyway, we still ended up walking 11 miles each day.
Oh my God, that's ridiculous.
Oh my How are God. You?
So I got pictures done with my family. That was an event and a half.
We with your parents?
No, not my parents. Just David, the boys at Griffith Park. And I got the boys in like suspenders and bow ties, and they looked so adorable. If only they would stay in their clothes. They were taking them off. They were itchy. I'm hot. I'm tired.
You mean before the pictures?
Before the pictures. The shoot didn't even start. We had to bribe my older son with a toy. And then my younger one with like McDonald's or some crazy stuff.
Ooh, that's right. He's a foodie.
Yes, exactly. Something food. But so that was the crazy part. But the interesting part of the weekend was I went to a seminar from a UCLA neuroscientist on the brain and love, and it was fascinating.
Oh, wonderful.
And
what can you share?
Okay, so first of all, when the brain is in love, a scientist cannot tell the difference between what the brain looks like on love and on cocaine. So I thought that was really interesting. Who do you think falls in love faster, men or women?
Men.
Yep. Exactly. Men fall in love faster. Women are a little bit more protective, probably because of the eggs. They have to be a little more picky. It was just fascinating. It was really, really...
Give me another quiz.
Exactly. I knew you'd like that. You're the competitive one.
I love quizzes.
Let me think what else he had said that was like... Oh, this is interesting. Yeah, you'll like this. So they did a study on women and basically had them smell T-shirts of men that had worked out. And... do you think the women wanted the men's scent that had the same immune systems as them or different?
Different.
You're too good at this. That's exactly it. It was different, and it makes sense. I mean, biologically, it's like you want all of the, you know, good bacteria and whatever you call it. But, yeah, so it was really eye-opening and
bigger
cool.
Genetic pool, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That makes sense. I'm going to go to a seminar. I think maybe you'll want to go with me, the neuroscience and yoga.
Oh, that's right.
You would
that's
love
great.
That.
Yes, I would. Well, he talked a lot about mindfulness. Mm-hmm. Now mindfulness is accepted like from the Journal of, you know, whatever, medical research, but like legitimately, you know, that you can say, yes, this is proven to lower stress, lower anxiety, things like that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
So it was really cool.
So David takes care of the boys all day when you're gone?
We had a babysitter, please.
Of course.
Come on.
Has he ever managed the two?
Not a full day. I don't think so. No. I don't think so.
But you have.
I have.
Not well.
Not well. It's tough. After 2 hours, it's funny because I volunteered today in London's class, in the pre-K, like the TK class, and I was like, God, wow, this is tough. I mean, it's one teacher for 23 or 25 kids and no aid. So I'm like, God, this poor woman. I'd be like a chronic alcoholic after that.
Well, you did a good deed.
Yeah.
Now, once for the year, you're done.
Pretty much, yeah. I'm all right with that.
You're so good about all those things. That's great.
That's so funny you said that, because David said the same thing to me this morning, and I'm like, really? Like, I think that it just feels normal, but I guess a lot of people don't do these things.
A lot of people don't. I used to love it. That was like my favorite time when Tiffany was young, and she appreciated me being there.
Exactly.
Go away, Mommy.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
But it all recycles. You know, now she's just a love bug and always around. Okay. So we should talk about our guests from last week.
Yes.
We had Drs. John and Julie Gottman, the 10 Principles of Effective Couples Therapy. Very informative. If you missed that show, please go take a listen. And any more you want to say about that?
No, I totally agree. I mean, these are the sort of the godfathers of couples therapy.
Yes.
So it was really great to have them on. And they've written so many publications. So they also talk about their newest book also. So if you missed that show, tune in.
Yeah. And today I'm always so excited when we have an in-house guest. And this one came referred by one of our famous past guests who we've had on the show before, Courtney DeHarsh. She's in studio too, but she doesn't want to speak because she said she had her great moment. But today, from her recommendation, we have Corey Greathouse Sloan, the founder and president of Life Uncommon. She has served as executive director for 3 years at another Los Angeles-based treatment program that she created and has helped hundreds of clients in that time. Corey is well-versed in what it takes to create and sustain a clinically sound and patient care-driven facility. Her passion for helping addicts and alcoholics stay clean and sober and her own work in recovery has inspired Corey to provide clients of Life Uncommon with something many treatment programs do not, the confidence, motivation, and follow-through to become self-sustaining, active members of society while actively participating in their own recovery. Welcome, Corey.
Thank you so much. It's so good to be here.
So glad to have you here. So we were in shock because your photo is this, you know, beautiful blonde bombshell, and you're still beautiful, but your hair is so dark.
It is.
Is there a story?
There's always a story. There's a reason behind everything I do. I was presenting the last 4 or 5 years of my research and data at Gallup's Global Summit in Omaha, Nebraska this past July. And, you know, as a woman, when you walk into a room, especially when you're talking about data, research, science, you have a very short window in which to get people to buy in and take you seriously.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain perception shift when we're listening to women mm-hmm. than there is when we're listening to men. That's compounded, I've seen, by appearance, hair color, whether or not a woman wears glasses or contacts or has, mm-hmm. you know, one thing or another. And I had been working toward this opportunity to present at the summit for many years. I'd been studying what is right with people who struggle with addiction and mm-hmm. alcoholism, and I needed to be taken seriously.
Of course.
I didn't have mm-hmm. the time to give, to wait for people to buy in. And so I changed my hair color.
Okay.
She's like, I'm just going to go for it.
I decided I was just going to change it. I had some girlfriends who strongly advised against it.
Oh, really?
We had extensive mm-hmm. conversations about feminine ideals, feminist ideals, mm-hmm. and what we're taught. And ultimately, my decision was that I appreciate and I support that battle, and in this moment,
mm-hmm.
it was more important to me that I be heard,
right?
Sure.
Than that I be
so
my natural hair color.
Have you noticed an actual shift in how people relate to you in general?
It's so funny. I asked her the same thing before we started.
Oh, you did?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
I've found that when I am dark instead of blonde, people respond to me more seriously. Likewise, when I am when my hair's down versus when it's up, people seem to feel less threatened.
When it's up.
When it's down.
When it's down.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Because when it's up, it's this tall, big, like, mass.
Ominous.
Yeah. It has almost a...
like authoritative.
Librarian authoritative feel to it. So I have, over the years, really learned how to modify my appearance to my audience as a woman, like as an executive. When you're working with, you know, one group of people, when you're meeting with partners, you're going to dress differently than when you meet with clients. It's really been quite an interesting adventure. I could talk about just that for so long. Way too long.
I'm trying to remember when I told you that I went pretty dramatically different from... I had continued to put highlights in my hair because I was getting grayer and grayer, so they kept saying, you don't have to color your hair, just add the highlights. Well, I ended up being almost blonde again. And I'm naturally dark. I was born with dark hair. Then it moved into much lighter hair, and then it just naturally wanted to go dark again. So I had all these highlights, and I was like, it turned out blonde. And so I went, and I said, I'm just done with this. I don't want to keep doing the highlights. They take longer than a color. So I went, and I got an auburn color. Uh-huh. I walked home. I went back home, walked in the door, and my daughter drops her jaw. She goes, you're not my mommy anymore. She was like 7 or 8, and I had makeup on, and she's just like, who are you?
Right, like exactly. Yeah. No, my son hates when I put on makeup. Like he cannot stand it. Or like I put on like a face mask on and he's like, like I don't get it. It's so funny. It's like to them, it's like a different person completely.
But I'm trying to remember if I felt differently in terms of how people related to me. I wish I
So you were like a reddish color?
It was kind of very dark, not really red. It was like auburn, more dark, and then I just had it progressively more like my natural color. Yeah. So we have kind of similar hair colors.
Yeah. I'm getting very... It's a lot of work to keep it dark.
Well, I was thinking, because so you're naturally light.
I'm naturally
light.
That's
amazing.
Yeah. So it starts looking like my hair is thinning as my roots grow out.
Mm-hmm. Right. But well, anyway.
It's a whole thing.
us women.
And I am now naturally gray. It's pretty much... I'm pretty sure I'm just naturally gray.
So funny.
That is so funny.
All right. So back to you. Yes. Exactly. So back to Corey. First of all, I love that name. It's like a label, like a fashion label. You know what I mean? Corey, Great House Sloan.
Is Great House actually your middle name? Or is
Great House is my maiden name.
Oh.
That's such a great name.
Okay. Really Thank is. You. And I was far older when I married than most of my peers were. And so I had hated my name growing up. And then it was like, well, wait a minute. I'm rather attached to it now at 35 or however old I was. And I couldn't just let go. So I had an identity crisis that lasted probably 6 months. I would write my name different ways. So I settled on Corey L. Great House Sloan, no period, no hyphen. However, I used the initial CLS. So it's...
Right. It's all over.
It's all over. I couldn't let Great House go. Well, I published a book under that.
It is, it's a great name.
A book? What'd you publish?
Oh, I wrote a novella called Another Name for Autumn that was published on Black Hill Press, which is now 188 Center, in 2013.
Oh, nice. That's great.
Yeah, it was, it's a lovely, lovely story. I'm looking forward to continuing it.
Beautiful. So why don't you tell us sort of your background and your story and how you came to be where you are today? How much time do we have? Is that what you're saying?
How much time do we have? Well,
the clipped up version.
Yeah, exactly.
The Reader's Digest version is, I came to create Life Uncommon because I noticed a huge gap in the treatment industry. I was watching young people be institutionalized for profit. That was what I saw. Largely because of the unavailability of aftercare.
Absolutely.
Right.
So I had simultaneously been researching strengths and Dr. Don Clifton's research into Strengths in Positive Psychology that he had done with the Gallup organization. And I began building on that. In my own recovery, I was always really drawn to the phrase in the big book, you know, alcoholic, no one likes to think he's bodily and mentally different from his fellows. And I realized that that didn't necessarily have to be a bad thing. Mm-hmm. We talk to ourselves and about ourselves and each other as though it is, but it doesn't need to be, and I don't believe it is so. And I had been researching this. I asked Gallup for their ranked data by frequency of appearance in 2013. They were very supportive and just handed it over.
Okay.
And I began researching the question and investigating the question of whether alcoholics and addicts would have dominant themes and theme domains in terms of strength and talent mm-hmm. than traditionally successful people.
Ah, what did you find?
Yeah, what did you find? This is a great question.
I found a lot of interesting things. Among the Gallup's data set, which they call successful people, that's their terminology, the theme most likely to appear in someone's top five is achiever. Surprise. Mm-hmm. Right? Successful people are
high achievers.
High achievers.
Of course.
Okay, great. In alcoholics and addicts, it's empathy.
Mm.
I also found that while the successful population has in the number 34 slot a theme called command, which is that je ne sais quoi, that person you follow, you don't really know why.
Right.
That's a dead last at 4.8% frequency.
Of people who they consider successful.
In the top five. 4.8% have command in their top five.
Uh-huh.
In alcoholics, that jumps to 19.
Mm-hmm.
From 34, mm-hmm. dead last, to 19.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's substantial. We also found that the inverse of that, what we find with alcoholics and addicts in that number 34 spot is discipline.
Right. Yeah.
And of course.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. Preceded by focus.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And I had first taken this assessment when I was like 2 or 3 years sober. It was, to put frame on that, I'll be 13 years sober. March 21st of 2018.
Congratulations.
Yes.
Thank you. And when I first took it, it was $20. I had to borrow the $20.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that's what my life looked like.
Right.
And I took this assessment, and it gave me my top, you know, my top five strengths. And it says strategic, individualization, achiever, learner, responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at that, and I scoffed. Like, what is this to me? I can tell you exactly how I used all of these things to get loaded in 1991 when my mother died suddenly
mm-hmm.
and stay that way until I was nearly 27 years old. But what is this to me now? How can there be anything good about me? I just had to borrow $20 to find out what's right with me.
Mm. And did the people working with you with this assessment help you kind of figure that out?
No, I was on my own. There wasn't any.
Wow.
I was sent home with a report, and I put it on a shelf.
Oh,
and I went about my life.
Uh-huh.
And several years later, I had been asked to open an IOP in Beverly Hills.
That's an inpatient...
Inpatient
program, just for our listeners.
And so I had done that, and I had been successful in that, and I was seeing our clients around every day, and they seemed very morose is the only word that really came to mind. And I reflected a little bit, and I thought, well, of course they're looking depressed. Like, what could be more depressing than talking about what's wrong with you all day?
Sure.
It sounds horrible. And so I found myself one day sitting in my office alone, and I had this really weird feeling. It was a very unfamiliar feeling in my stomach. And so I got still, and I realized that what I was feeling was fulfillment. And that was something that I didn't think that girls like me got to have.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Sweet.
So I went home that night, and I pulled that assessment off the shelf, and I looked at it, and I was like, oh, I'm using all of these same things.
In a positive way.
Right. And I recognized that that was where my fulfillment was being generated. And it grew from there. I'm naturally inquisitive. I started asking questions, running data, doing all of these things. And now I'm doing great, great things with Gallup and working on strategic partnerships with the Skid Row Housing Trust to bring strengths-based programming to their residents and helping them to harness those resources that they have within in a way that's going to lead them to greater fulfillment.
Well, it's very sweet.
We are talking with Corey Greathouse Sloan. She is the founder and president of Life Uncommon, and that is a Los Angeles-based treatment center for addicts and alcoholics. So I guess maybe you can tell us, can you tell us how your treatment center basically differs from, because there's so many in Los Angeles.
So many.
And I'm sure, you know, people out there are wondering, like, God, how do I choose? Or maybe you can kind of give some tips on how yours different and how people can choose.
Yeah, I think, well, how we're different is we provide aftercare. That's it.
And what does that mean?
What does that mean? When you finish intensive outpatient, there is really not anything for you in LA. That's where treatment ends.
Meetings,
not just here, but everywhere.
Yeah, there's meetings. That's what they...
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
they,
go to
they
meeting.
They direct you
good
to
luck.
Go to AA.
Yeah. Every day. Yeah.
Yeah. Have fun. You know, hopefully you get a good sponsor. And I found that people who are successful in long-term in their recovery are people who have committed support, committed professional support. At the IOP that I had created for my now former employer, I was discouraged from doing OP. That's
outpatient.
What it's called, just straight outpatient. Because it's, quote, not profitable.
Right.
That's, for me, that's not where I get my reward. I get my reward from seeing people be successful and from seeing the belief in themselves grow and having the conversations where you begin to see them understand how they really do matter and they really do have amazing talents. I mean, I think everyone who has ever known or loved an alcoholic or an addict has thought, if only they would use their powers for good.
Right.
We would solve all the world's problems. If only they would use their powers for good. Well, let's do that. Let's help them do that. Because what happens is when intensive outpatient ends, as you know, like, it's expensive to live here.
No.
It is. I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Are you kidding me?
Right? And imagine trying to get stable on a get well job.
Right.
Right.
You can't. Mm-hmm. Because it's so expensive to live in. So what I was seeing happen while I was working in higher levels of care, I was watching people come to the end of their IOP treatment.
Mm-hmm. And panic.
Panic. Next thing you know, they're in the cold and flu aisle of the Walgreens drinking a bottle of right. DXM, and they genuinely don't want to get loaded.
Right.
But they also don't want to be homeless.
Yeah.
And so,
mm-hmm. so they can get back
they
into
reset
a
the clock. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
They go back to the mm-hmm. beginning. Mm-hmm. And there was nothing available for people to support them mm-hmm. through building that life. So Life Uncommon is certified to provide the higher levels of care, the partial hospitalization, mm-hmm. the intensive outpatient, but we don't. It's a choice. Mm. Life Uncommon is every bit intentional. It is a choice to offer aftercare that is focused on not only continuing to, you know, work with a therapist mm-hmm. on, you know, whatever core issues, trauma, et cetera, haven't been addressed in their treatment episode so far, but also to have professional consults and assistance mm-hmm. in terms of building a successful life. We have CLEP exams, which are college-level examinations. You get college credit.
Oh, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. For taking them. And that's actually a service that's available to the public.
Mm-hmm.
It's not only available to our clients. We have brilliant case managers, but everything we do is strengths-based.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Everything is coming from the narrative of what's right with you.
Mm-hmm.
And our themes are neutral. And how we use them is positive or negative. And how do we teach people to engage their themes mm-hmm. in a positively productive way?
That's so true. I mean, a word is just a word, or a quality
right.
is just a quality.
Yeah.
And then we
mm-hmm.
attach something. And every quality has a positive and a negative component
right.
to it, depending
right.
on how it's used.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I mean, I was having a really powerful conversation with someone last weekend about just some gut-wrenching experience they had as a child, and a sex worker at that. And this was a friend of mine, and not a client, but they had never looked at the way that they achieved survival,
mm-hmm.
the way that they survived
mm-hmm.
from a strengths-based
perspective.
Yeah. And so we went through their top five strengths.
That's great.
And we just, how did you use your strategic?
Mm-hmm.
How would you make decisions? This person said something to me that I had seriously never heard from someone in all of my conversations, which was that rather than actively working nonstop, they would find someone who would take care of them for a few days.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's so smart.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's so smart. That's so strategic.
Mm.
And so resourceful.
Uh-huh.
Sure. And over the conversation, we got to really explore some powerful ways to engage that same
mm-hmm.
skill in a manner that would help them to be a more successful leader.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate for a
uh-huh.
second. So what would you say for people who would say, yes, I agree, strength-based perspectives works, but then it doesn't teach the addict accountability? And do you have any, like, thoughts around that?
Yeah, I think I don't believe that the two lie in conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Accountability is at Life Uncommon something that we take very seriously. We have to clearly communicate what the standards are and then hold people accountable for meeting them. And, you know, a strengths-based approach doesn't, in my opinion, absolve people of responsibility or accountability. Rather, it's about helping them to better understand how they can best be accountable to what they commit to. Right? It's about...
It's very individualized. Somebody right, like, saying, these are my goals, this is what I want to do, and then you holding them
right,
responsible to those.
We, and when I say we, I mean we as people, we as alcoholics,
mm-hmm.
We're really good at overshooting the mark.
Right.
Right? I'm going to do it perfectly, and I'm going to do it perfectly tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Starting tomorrow, I'm going to eat healthy every day. I'm going to work out for 2 hours. I'm going to get up at, mm-hmm. you know, 6 o'clock and
right.
do all of these things. And then by 9 o'clock, I
right.
only worked out for a 10-minute interval,
mm-hmm.
and I'm a failure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the narrative to continue
that's
to
right.
perceive yourself as yeah. a fuck up.
And so it's important to, I believe, address goals and setting realistic
mm-hmm.
goals. For instance, our attendance policy is a really odd sort of example, but it's like it is two groups, an individual session. Instead of holding people to, these are the days that you come here.
So it's not like Monday, Wednesday,
and if you're not here, then you have to leave and that's
mm-hmm.
it. No, we want you to be working.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So what we need
mm-hmm.
is for you to let us know.
Yeah.
Communicate.
Mm-hmm.
Because part of the circuitous behavior is an effort to have needs met.
Mm-hmm.
So we have an opportunity as an organization to give people a new experience of, hey, you know what? You got mm-hmm. an unexpected opportunity to cover a shift.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a call. Let us know. Talk to us so that you can have the experience of being met with, oh, that's great.
Right.
That'll be really great for you. Okay, what works for you? When can we reschedule?
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's treating someone like an adult.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Instead of
rather
like
than
a child
or a
coddling.
Dearling,
right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know.
And so that's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot
and
of fun.
And so in the aftercare, do you provide transportation if people need it? Job coaching? Like when you say
we do interviews. We do mock interviews
mm-hmm.
Good.
With people. We do resume prep.
Mm-hmm.
We will coach people on how to incorporate their themes
mm-hmm.
into their resume. We help them individually to explore their unique themes in the associated reports. Basically, everything that I wish someone
had
done
for
me,
right.
we're doing.
This is often the inspiration for us doing great things in the world,
exactly.
right? It's like,
yes.
geez.
Yes.
That part is people who just stay stuck in victimization.
That's
I didn't
right.
get that.
Uh-huh.
And envy people who do and spoil
mm-hmm.
it, as opposed to I didn't get that, but what an awesome thing to do. It's like an abused
right.
child that ends up having children and actually doing it really well.
And yeah.
Right,
breaking
really
the
well
cycle.
Instead of the repetition compulsion.
Yeah.
And that's like giving people a way out of the system.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
I
yeah.
can't really think of anything
right.
that I'd rather do.
Yeah, it's true.
Tell us something that is true that almost nobody agrees with you on.
That's a great question.
Clients should be held responsible for fees incurred for missed appointments.
Oh, interesting.
They should or shouldn't?
Should.
Should. And people disagree with you on
yes.
that?
Yes.
Really?
In
mm-hmm.
which I don't.
Yeah, I don't either.
No, people disagree. Yeah.
Oh, people who have to pay the fee disagree.
Yeah.
Even
yes.
people.
Well, that I've experienced.
I get pushback in the industry.
Really?
Also.
Really?
Yeah. But my feeling is, so are cancellation policies reasonable? Mm-hmm. 24 hours? Mm-hmm. Everyone gets like a get-out-of-jail-free card. We all make mistakes.
Yeah, of course.
Right. It happens. It's how you respond mm-hmm. that matters mm-hmm. most. So we have a 24-hour cancellation fee or cancellation policy, right. and the fee is only $25.
It's not even the full fee.
No. Right. No,
you're
I just.
Us look bad. Don't yeah, say exactly. that on
No, but it's really just about the accountability.
Right.
Right.
Right? Like, mm-hmm. I'm not interested at all in setting an unattainable requirement for someone.
Right.
If I know yeah. they can't meet it, then right. I'm really not helping.
Sure. Right.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So I see it as an opportunity to have them experience accountability. Mm-hmm. And the good feelings that come with that. Mm-hmm.
And it's also respect.
Yeah.
Right? Because you've dedicated that, like in our work, we dedicate that hour to somebody. Right.
Oh, yeah.
If somebody doesn't show up,
yeah,
then I can't fill the hour. I can't just call my list of clients and say, by the way, would you yeah. like to come in 5 minutes?
Exactly.
Because that's yeah. disrespectful to their lives.
Right.
So it also demonstrates empathy.
Yes.
The ability
Absolutely.
To think through that, well, just because I was only mm-hmm. thinking about myself, oh, I'm actually right. affecting another
Other person.
That's right.
Yeah.
And we have to, I don't know of other facilities who have even small, mm-hmm. you know, fees like that. There may be, but it's for most of our clients, it's a brand new mm-hmm. game. Like
right.
they need to check their schedule.
Mm-hmm.
They need to let us know. Like we communicate with them directly.
Mm-hmm.
We don't use intermediaries. We just treat them like adults.
So can you describe sort of a typical, I know it's probably hard, a typical day for a patient at your treatment center, what it would look like?
Yeah, I mean, they usually arrive 15 minutes or so before group starts, and everyone collects their placards. A placard is a two-sided, think like a table tent in a mm-hmm. restaurant, like that the dessert mm-hmm. menus are in, but we make one for each client on their day of admission, and it has their top five strengths on each side.
I love that too.
So that when we're in group mm-hmm. and you're making me crazy,
yeah,
or you're speaking my language,
yeah,
I can see what it is
mm-hmm.
that's great about you that's making me nuts right now.
Right, right.
Right? And I can see what it is in me
mm-hmm.
that might be off-put
mm-hmm.
by something. And it was something that I found so beneficial in the extensive training that I went through with Gallup that I wanted everyone mm-hmm. to have that experience. Mm. So group,
that's great.
They go to group and 90 minutes. Group themes are generally decided the previous, we give a curriculum,
mm-hmm.
but themes are decided the previous week for the following based on the needs of those we're serving at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And how many people are typically in a group?
No more than 12.
Mm-hmm.
No more.
Right.
Preferably 10
mm-hmm.
or fewer. 12, it splits. That's when
yeah.
you get two.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
And are they theme-based? Like, is one day about repairing from shame and another time?
Exactly.
It's a process, free-for-all. Is it?
We don't do a lot of free-for-all process groups.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder why that is. Boy, I remember doing those, and then people just complain about the place.
Oh.
That's right. And people just, it's not generally constructive.
Mm-hmm.
If there is something as a group that they need to process,
mm-hmm.
Say a friend who they were all close with
mm-hmm.
has overdosed mm-hmm. and died.
Right.
Sometimes they will want to process that, and we create the safe space.
Sure.
For that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But all in all, the clients who admit to our program have 60, 90, 120 days sober when they arrive.
Because they've been in an inpatient.
Because they've been in a residential. They've finished IOP.
Right.
We don't admit clients who have not completed
an IOP
mm-hmm. program. Mm.
So yours is strictly outpatient.
Correct. Strictly outpatient. We only do the thing
that
people
no one else don't want to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And is insurance cover this? Is this something that people
take insurance. We also do private pay. Mm-hmm. And it is a goal of mine to find a way to support the community who are on Medicaid and Medi-Cal, and how to offer the same high quality of services without compromising our values or what they deserve.
Mm-hmm.
Accessibility is extraordinarily important to me.
Right.
So I believe that I will reach that goal by June of 2018.
Oh, that's great.
Okay. I will
have figured it out.
I
love that.
Now,
that's great.
Hold on. Is that realistic?
Yes.
Okay.
It is realistic. Great catch, because I would have liked for it to be done last year.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Would have been great for me.
So I have a question for you personally. Do you feel like being around people who have sort of come from similar backgrounds as you, do you find it triggering, or is it like, oh my God, I can sort of, that's what I was, and thank God now this makes me, you know, want to stay in my recovery even longer?
I don't, the thing that it triggers in me is hope.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it triggers in me. I know where I come from, and so I know that they can too.
Right.
They can too. And if we are responsible as providers in the way that we treat those we serve, and if we focus on truly helping, then we're going to have, we have better outcomes.
Right.
Sure. Right? And I don't really know that, I mean, I find people are surprised. Clients are surprised when they hear that when I first took the assessment, I had to borrow the money.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
I've been homeless, right? I've been destitute. I've been in the dark because my electricity was turned off in sobriety. I've been a maid in sobriety.
Right.
Like, and so I have experience that, like, if you just keep showing up and do the right thing because it's the right thing to do, not because you feel like doing it.
Right.
And through what I consider like values-based decision making, you just kind of keep plodding along and you get there.
Yeah. Cup becomes a new chain link.
Sure.
Yeah. Right. Like, one of the hardest things for me in my drinking was the realization that I was so far removed from the type of person who my mom would have been proud of.
Yeah.
And that mattered to you.
Oh, it mattered.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was everything.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. And it was only a year ago, I think it was a year ago yesterday, that I realized that I had reached a point where I felt my mother would be proud of me.
Mm.
Like, I had become a person who she would be proud to call her daughter. And that was really powerful to me because the chasm that existed in the space between my intentions and my actions was so painful. It was like when I got sober, if one more person said to me, I know your heart was in the right place. I was just going to kill myself. That was it. Because if you're telling me my heart's in the right place, that means I'm doing the wrong thing.
If you're not showing up for what you know to be right.
And that was so painful to me.
So that was your motivator.
That's been, it's a really strong motivator for me.
So what is your superpower? What's yours, Kelly? You think, too.
I see the world differently. I see, literally see shapes and things. And you know how it, you have children?
Yeah.
You are, look, Mom, a penguin.
Yeah, right, right.
What? I still do that. And it applies to everything I do. I don't believe in impossible. I only believe in how. I'm brilliant at reverse engineering things. Software processes.
That's awesome.
So it's that same thing. It's strategic.
Right.
I'm extraordinarily strategic. And that's my number one strength. And that's the thing that I spent all of those years trying to shut off.
That's sad.
But
you found it, so that's
I found it, and I learned how to use it in a way that's helpful.
Yes.
And not paralyzing. And that's where the magic is. Yeah. But what's yours?
I would say probably connecting to people, I think, is probably my biggest strength. I mean, I don't know, just sort of being able to,
I'll go with that.
You think so? Yeah. I mean, ever since I was little, it was always like, Kelly's a great student, but way too social. Like, that was like every teacher's comment. Like, I don't know, I could just sort of connect with others. What about you? What's yours?
I'd say empathy.
Yeah, I could definitely see that for
intuitive
sure.
Empathy.
Yeah.
Even so, though I make crass jokes and all that stuff out of my heart, I totally
love so
people
empathetic.
And where they're at and can really appreciate the pain and the darkness that people experience.
Yeah.
But I think it's fun to make fun of ourselves. And
of course. Yeah. No, you absolutely. Have so much
and
empathy.
And I'm sure your empathy helps you to gauge,
when it's enough.
Yeah, that's okay, a good point.
Right? Mm-hmm. And one thing I can tell you is that I have noticed in my data that there is a higher frequency of appearance of a theme called connectedness within clinicians.
Oh, interesting. Hmm. Oh, I believe that. That's really cool.
There's a lot of connectedness. There are four theme domains, okay? They are influencing, relationship building, strategic thinking, or executing. Each of the 34 themes falls into one of those four domains.
Oh, we're almost out of time, so we'll have to continue. Okay. I know we'll have to get back on that because that sounds fascinating.
It does.
It's really cool.
Yeah. Okay. But most importantly, tell everybody where they can find you and. Best resource?
Well, you can give us a call or text us at 310-299-2102. It's 310-299-2102. Our website is livelifeuncommon.com. That's a call to action. We're doing things here. livelifeuncommon.com.
Love it.
And
We were talking today with Corey Greathouse Sloan. She is the founder and president of Life Uncommon, a treatment center in Los Angeles to help. It's an outpatient treatment center to help addicts and alcoholics. Thank you so much.
Thank you
so much, Miss Kelly. Where the hell are you going next week?
oh, nothing exciting. I have to go to court for my son to try to get him services. So that's what I'm doing.
Well,
yes.
And I'll be holding down the ship here.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, we will have How to De-Escalate with author Douglas Knoll and my buddy Misty Barnes, who's also
Oh, she's coming? Awesome.
She's
cool.
Come and co-host with me. So
I think that sounds fascinating. I'm sad to miss it. So.
And I will post the phone number and the website on our summary on our site in case people miss that.
That's fantastic. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank and follow you. Us on Instagram at Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly, and Twitter at DocTherapist1, and Facebook, the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show. Thanks
Love
so much.
Love you all. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.